AAPS does not have many surgeons, much less orthopedists, among the ranks of the opted out. Therefore, networking with and personal exhortations from the surgeons who have opted out is the most logical way to broadcast that surgeons can do this successfully. Largely, of course, because so many of you pioneers in primary care in the medical specialties have blazed the trail before us and slayed so many dragons. So what is the scope of the Medicare problem? Briefly, I refer you to Dr. Huntoon's excellent journal article 2 years ago in which he chronicled the general accounting office's miserable statistics that 85% of the time when we call for answers, we get the wrong answers, and CMS has no explanation for it. More troubling, 2 years later, the 85% poor response rate increased 11% in foolishness to 96% of the time. As he aptly stated in this article, and it merits quoting him, the federal Medicare bureaucracy therefore not only tolerates poor performance, but judging from the way it monitors such performance, it considers accuracy and competence to be irrelevant. And notwithstanding all this incompetency, as Dr. Heeb knows and others, orthopedists in the audience, there's just a prodigious amount of insanity in the Medicare reimbursement and RVS for orthopedics. Now, as we all know, a customer-oriented free market would never tolerate such poor performance. When Providence finally awakened me to this and how progressively and illicitly Medicare had criminalized medical practice in the last 40 years, my conscience could not stand it any longer, especially when CMS itself cannot be held accountable for fraud. But even perceived noncompliance with CMS rules and even simple clerical errors made without the intent to defraud this status bureaucracy can put the physician and his office in the crosshairs of these criminal penalties that we've talked about, fines, imprisonment, confiscation of personal patient records, and seizure of life savings, all under the presumption of being guilty until proven innocent. And of course, as we've learned in this meeting, pitting limited resources of the physician against the bottomless war chest of the feds and their prosecutorial zeal. Few details about my personal experience. The 18th century Irish philosopher Edmund Burke once said, "Better to be despised for too anxious apprehensions than ruined by too confident security." With the spirit of these discerning words, I voluntarily withdrew from Medicare and most other federal government reimbursed health programs last year, July of 2005, when I opened Trinity Hand Specialists. But now I will gladly see Medicare patients on my terms on a prearranged, privately contracted, and reduced fee-for-service basis. Of course, opting out of Medicare Part B physician services does not affect a Medicare beneficiary's Part A benefits for hospital diagnostic tests, hospitalization, and outpatient surgery, which are all usually bigger ticket items in my services anyway. However, my opting out of Medicare Part B does not preclude me from billing Cigna, the Tennessee Medicare carrier, for emergency limb or life-threatening services, and some surgeons here may not realize that. And this is something I've done for older patients needing the emergent specialty services that I offer, and at the same time often helping loyal referral sources who are usually stuck with an elderly hand patient that they can't find appropriate help for. Now, there are some nuances to this, but suffice it to say that if follow-up visits and in-office services like therapy or x-rays, which I both provide, are needed after the emergency care, then one either needs to write off these expenses, which I usually do, privately contract with the patient for the post-op care, as I've done on a few occasions, or refer them to someone else for post-op care, which I'll probably never do. Now, the federal guidelines do allow one to opt out, and I want you to hear this clearly. The federal guidelines do allow one to opt out while other partners in a group practice stay in the program. Granted, they must consent to your doing such diplomatically, but it can be done. I didn't need this proviso since I had other reasons for leaving my ortho group, like ending the martyrdom of compulsory level 1 general orthopedic trauma and practice call. Now, once my opted-out status is made known to a Medicare patient, it often comes to light that some of these folks are also actually privately insured, or that secondary carriers, will cover my services, only because I am opted out. And in East Tennessee, where a picture and a paragraph will seemingly qualify one for disability, many of these folks, of course, are not indigent, remain gainfully employed in one way or another, and will readily pay for my services. And if they won't, a family member or someone employing them when they got hurt often will. I should add that opting out has not affected any of my hospital, outpatient surgery center or other commercial health insurance carrier credentialing or contracting. Largely, this is because I filed for divorce for Medicare instead of them excluding me. In spite of some local criticism of my motives for opting out, I remain even more deeply committed to the practice of medicine according to the ethical principles by which I was trained and those precepts of the free market that should govern all commerce, including medicine, in a truly liberated capitalistic economy. I therefore welcome all self-pay patients, some of whom have told me that they were turned away from other orthopedic practices because they didn't have insurance. They are among the ranks of the most grateful patients that I've ever cared for. I welcome new and established Medicare patients and do not limit appointments for them, as more practices are covertly doing. Instead of restricting access to hand care as the only full-time hand surgeon in my region, it is my policy to welcome these patients who value my subspecialty services more than the expediency of going to someone else who takes Medicare, who may not even routinely see hand patients, much less operate on upper extremity problems. For those who could care less about quality and competence, as long as someone else is paying for it, I'm glad they're in someone else's office. Medicare beneficiaries will often unhesitatingly pay for second opinion time, though, when things haven't gone well with their first surgeon or surgery. In hand surgery, as in any enterprise, the bitterness of poor quality remains long after the sweetness of a lower price is forgotten. And after rendering a second opinion in this context, some will make you a purely economic decision to stay with Medicare providers. And others will choose to privately contract for the recommended care. But either way, I've at least been paid for my contracting and consulted time for what are usually complex problems. So after opting out, I do just as much surgery on seniors and the disabled as I did prior to opting out. Thus, my opting out did not change the complexion of my practice. I've just seen the Medicare-related 10% of my practice volume and revenues switch to 10% self-pay at time of service. But a much higher percentage of my frustrations and almost all exposure to CMS's bureaucracy vanished overnight. I admit that it would take more faith to opt out if a third of one's practice were based on such, but based on sight alone, it is still a very realistic option if one's practice becomes much more efficient as a result and markets to a different patient population or populations, especially when Medicare reimbursements continue to shrink and overheads continue to rise. For some Medicare patients for whom government health benefits have been of great financial help, my opting out leaves them in a fiscal dilemma. But as for any patient of significantly limited means, my office will simply limit and explain what the discounted charge for services will be, and those who cannot manage that amount will be assisted in determining what is a personally manageable payment plan. Either way, administrative cost savings are passed on to these self-pay patients. Last year, I even had an indigent elderly widow simply bring at my request an affidavit of her completion of 40 hours of community or church service. She happened to bring it in from her pastor. As payment in full for her pending thumb arthritis surgery after having done the opposite thumb surgery while I was in the group. This way, she got the message that healthcare is a privilege and a responsibility, not a right, and took more ownership of her role as a compliant and thankful patient as a result. Still, some elderly and disabled patients are unhappy with this plan and my opted-out decision. Therefore, if they are an established Medicare patient of mine, I gladly transfer their records to their physician of choice. If they are a potentially new Medicare patient uncomfortable with my opted-out status, I suggest they simply seek hand care elsewhere by someone who's participating in Medicare and let me know if I can be of help in the future. For those Medicare patients who would like me to provide their hand and upper extremity care, then the fee-for-service private contracting I do and should be done by the book, the details of which are now well described on our website, the AAPS website, and audio tapes, past AAPS journals and monographs, as well as on the web in the Federal Register. It is out of the scope of this talk to review all the pearls and pitfalls of doing this, especially as a surgeon, but available for your perusal on my website, trinityhand.com, where I can also be contacted by email. That's trinityhand.com. Is a copy of the private contract I use, which is a hybrid of the simplest and most complex samples that I was able to find. The affidavit that one sends to the regional Medicare carrier to notify initially and then renew every 2 years is also verbatim on the AAPS website and can be downloaded. And, of course, send all this stuff, certified return receipt, and months in advance to the carrier. Now, I don't let my staff get bogged down with Medicare beneficiaries' incredulity over and ignorance of this whole process. Whenever possible, potential privately contracted Medicare patients are respectfully directed to my website to download and study the opt-out information before calling back, or told to come by the office to just pick up the explanatory opt-out and private contracting information. They are encouraged to review the information with another family member and bring that person to the pending appointment. It greatly facilitates communication, preferably an adult relative that lives in the area. They are told not to be offended by the private contract's legalese and that their government requires such. This upsets some, and without apology for my decision and office policy, we respect anyone who is uncomfortable with this process. If it were up to me, these folks on Medicare should not need any more of a contract to see me privately than it takes for them to walk into their grocery store or any other retail store. Increasingly and encouragingly, though, some of these seniors are complimenting my decision while lamenting their own disdain for and prior hassles with CMS and their local carrier, Cigna. So may we all heed, in summary, the timeless words of George Washington: government is not reason. Government is not eloquence. It is force. And like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. We all know that which the federal government subsidizes, it ultimately controls. And while there's a vestige of the free market in medicine left, and the 13th Amendment to our Constitution, which prohibits our individual and collective involuntary servitude, I join hands with you, AAPS, to work as hard as possible to show that independent physicians can provide better health care than the feds anytime. And I do hope that more physicians and surgeons will circumspectly resolve to join the ranks of the opted out, and that we will all do a better job of informing not only our peers, but the public of how poorly and nefariously the federal government handles health care. When we firmly fix our undistracted eyes on the principles of liberty, Americans truly will be free. I'll close with an anonymous quotation for your reflection. For all I know, having attended my first meeting here and met many of you, it could have come from a member of AAPS, present or past, committed to our motto and Hippocratic precept of all for the patient. To attain excellence, you must care more than others think is wise, risk more than others think is safe, and dream more than others think is practical. Thank you for your attention.
Are there any questions for Dr.
Lee? Thank you for the question. I'll repeat it for those in the back. The question is, how do I prorate, or what do I charge a Medicare beneficiary? Well, I'm able to do for the first time in now 16 years of practice what I've never been able to do, and that is charge based on the level of acuity, complexity, comorbidities, anticipated length of follow-up. I have two certified hand therapists in my office, and most probably the average Medicare beneficiary who is not indigent, I'm going to put it at somewhere between 160% and 200% of Medicare. As they become more financially in need, I'll just take Medicare assignment rates. And that's easier for my fee schedule and my billing clerk, who happens to also be my wife. And I think that answers your question, but it's a great question, and I think there needs to be a sliding scale to be fair and free market minded. Pardon me?
Can you accept assignment if you are opted out?
The question is, can you accept assignment if you're opted out? And the question is no. For a lot of these choice plans, these care choice plans, where private insurers are being paid by Medicare to assign Medicare benefits, you still cannot take those and still participate in Medicare, because you get into the discriminatory language that's precluded or proscribed by the federal guidelines. So it's all or none. Except if they have other carriers who will pay you because you're opted out. I'd be glad to take more questions, and I'll also hang around later in the interest of time if some questions can't be answered because of time. Go ahead, Lee.
Okay, so let me get this right. If you're opted out, they pay you cash for your fee for service for outpatient care. And when you go in the hospital and do a surgery on a patient, let's say it's an elective case. I'm talking about elective surgery now. You bill them your fee for the surgery, and Medicare pays the hospital fee.
That is accurate. That is completely true. Be it outpatient or inpatient, for elective surgery, Medicare Part A will pay for the MRI scans that you need for your back patients, CT scans, any other electrodiagnostics. All that's Part A, including hospitalization, inpatient, and outpatient. So you just privately contract them up front for a fee for service for what you expect as work product for the surgery and 3 months of follow-up. And I would add that if there is a complication, that you just not charge them for the return procedure. And that's what I've done. And since I have an operatory in my office, I can do a third of my surgery now under local anesthesia. And so it's much easier for me to absorb those costs from time and work product and so forth. But it's doable for a spine surgeon.
Michael Robb, Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, Mike.
Congratulations on the opt-out decision. And I would like to know, when you write the order for rehabilitation of the hand for post-op care and or neuroimaging, or orthopedic imaging, pre or post-op, have you been finding that your order with your handwritten script will be paid for by their Medicare carrier?
The question is, and I'm sure everybody heard it, but having been done this 15 months, I've never had a patient come to me for whom I have privately contracted, and they have told me that their Medicare carrier did not pay for any Part A services. And I'm just not aware of that happening, and I'm not sure it's legal for them to do that. So have you had that problem?
No, I haven't. So apparently the opted-out physician can write the script for
absolutely
something that is ancillary care, and the insurance can pay. So it's another way of encouraging the patient. Your out-of-pocket costs can potentially be minimized. You're not going to have
absolutely
to pay cash for everything.
And may I just add that if anybody has a question, they're welcome to call my office. It's on the website. They can talk to my wife, Debbie. And she can actually go through some cases with you if any of you are needing a little more specific information. But that's a great question. And plus just the time and convenience, and I try to do some of these other excellence parameters and getting people in quickly, and it has value.
And also, just briefly, some of the preliminary experience here in Arizona is that if that patient does have a non-Medigap secondary, the secondary can pay. So the patient may submit the bill to Medicare for the purposes of a valid denial, not for the purposes of getting reimbursed by Medicare, but just getting a letter that has the terms valid denial, after which point they can then submit that letter plus your bill straight to their secondary, and the secondary will be forced to make a decision on it. But the secondary is paralyzed if it doesn't go through the Medicare channel first.
That is true. And to add insult to injury to CMS, and to underscore the importance of what I believe I've done and other surgeons have done, like Dr. Chris, many of those secondary carriers will pay your regular, usual, and customary fees, which is amazing. It's exception and not the rule. I'll be glad to stay later.
One more question.
Okay.
Just to follow a point, I'm a dermatologist, and I'm Patricia Dupre from Danville, Virginia. I do a lot of blood tests. I'm opted out. You need a UPIN number in order to have the patients get the blood test. But the fact that I'm opted out doesn't affect their ability to get any blood tests. As you may know, you need to switch to an MPI in the next 12 months or so in order to continue to do that. So you can get the ancillary test done, but you need a UPIN to do that.
Correct. She is right.
One more question. Do you
Certainly.
Take emergency room calls?
When I left my orthopedic group, I went to courtesy staff at our Level 1 teaching hospital. And, of course, surgery centers aren't open, which is where I spend most of my time at nights and weekends. So I have no compulsory call. I'm only on call for my patients.
So if a patient comes in who's Medicare and you take care of this patient as an emergency, how does Medicare handle that?
It's just as I said. I submit, when I see them back and follow up, we get their information and we send it to the Medicare carrier, which is Cigna in our state. My being on call or not has nothing to do with that process.
Because Medicare wants to convert those patients into as if you've never opted out because they're emergency.
Yeah, you've got to be careful, and that's why I did make mention of the fact that you need to submit that for the emergency care delivered only at the time of the acute, the injury that was emergent, and then all follow-up care has to be as a as an opted-out physician. You have to privately contract. It
doesn't. Out, how in the world can they say you're back in? But yet, it seems to me like this provision in Medicare needs to be challenged.
Well,
you should be the one to challenge it.
Well, perhaps.
But it does give me a way of at least being compensated for some of my time, though many of the times, as I said, you're often doing the favors for the emergency room physicians who are just dangling with the patient that they can't find.
Thank you, Dr.